Hej, det er din vært, Anders Nedergaard, a.k.a. Dr. Muskel. Du skal til at lytte til et afsnit af Fitness MK, og det er jeg naturligvis rigtig glad for, at du gerne vil bruge din tid på. Men før du giver dig i kast med det, så har jeg lige en lille smule public service announcements, som jeg gerne vil stange ud. Hvis du allerede har hørt dem før, eller er pisse ligeglad, så kan du springe et par minutter frem, og så slipper du for det. Men noget af det handler om, at vi er begyndt at genudgive de gamle afsnit af Fitness MK for Radio 24/7-tiden. Det har du formentlig lagt mærke til, hvis du følger podcasten. Det er jo sådan, at de første 222 afsnit af Fitness MK blev lavet på Radio 24/7, hvor det både blev udgivet som radioprogram og podcast. Og det var i årrækken fra 2015 til 2020. Og det betyder jo, at det er nogle afsnit af en ældre dato, og da mange af afsnittene grundlæggende har en videnskabeligt sådan fundament, så er det værd at bemærke, at videnskaben kan ændre sig i den mellemliggende periode, ligesom at verdens og gæsternes holdning til nogle af de ting, der bliver diskuteret, også godt kan have ændret sig. Man kan genkende de gamle afsnit på deres programnummer, så hvis man går ind i den app, man afspiller det fra, og ser, at tallet det er 220 eller lavere, så er det selvfølgelig, fordi det er de gamle afsnit. De har også en lidt anden produktion med nogle andre jingler, og alle afsnit fra det 427, de har også en længde på 54,5 minut, hvor de fleste af afsnittene produceret efter, de er længere. Vi gør det sådan, at vi genudgiver et af de gamle afsnit hver tirsdag og torsdag, mens at eventuelle nyproducerede afsnit de bliver udgivet som vanligt lørdag morgen. Og vi gør det, at når vi udgiver de gamle afsnit, så får de lov til at ligge øverst i feedet. Vi giver dem altså en ny udgivelsesdato, sådan så de kommer til at ligge øverst for alle dem, der sorterer dem efter udgivelsesdato. Men når de har ligget øverst i feedet i cirka en måned, så retter vi deres udgivelsesdato til deres oprindelige udgivelsesdato, så de rykker ned i feedet, hvis man sorterer efter dato. Sådan så de kommer til at ligge i den rigtige rækkefølge efter en måneds tid, både numerisk og kronologisk. Jeg skal også sige, at den kontaktmail, jeg giver i podcastene, både de gamle og de nye, den har jeg ændret på, eller den er ikke længere den, som jeg siger i afsnittet. Den er nu fitnessmk@andersnedergaard.dk, og ikke den, som der bliver angivet i afsnittet. Jeg har også lavet et nyhedsbrev til podcasten, og jeg har lavet om på hjemmesiden også, for at gøre brugeroplevelsen af podcasten lidt bedre. Der er en blog med et kommentar til nogle af afsnittene og nyheder om den, og der er indlæg oprettet til hvert podcast-afsnit hvor, med programteksten og links til de forskellige afspillertjenester og lidt andre ting, hvis man har lyst til at følge med i podcasten. Der er selvfølgelig også et sted, hvor man kan signe op til nyhedsbrevet. Nyhedsbrevet, der får man månedligt at vide noget om, hvad der er sket og hvad der kommer til at ske i podcasten, og en gang imellem så vil jeg også udsende lidt bonusmateriale via dem. Der er links til alle de her forskellige ting i programteksten i den app, du hører podcasten fra. Og nu skal jeg ikke spille mere af din tid. Jeg vil ønske dig et rigtig godt afsnit og en god dag. Vi snakkes ved. Du lytter til Fitness MK. Og i dag, der skal vi lave opfølgeren til det interview, vi lavede i afsnit nummer 300 med Patrick Arnold, som ikke nåede at blive færdig, fordi at, han blev kaldt tilbage på arbejde. Her i Fitness MK har vi snakket rigtig meget om doping og præstationsfremmende stoffer. Og en af dem, der sådan har stået på Black Hat siden af hele doping-spørgsmålet, det er Patrick Arnold, som er der været involveret i adskillige sådan kan man sige, doping- og kosttilskudssager. Mest nok kun lidt, så har han opfundet brohormoner i sin tid, som var sin egen ting, og det dækkede vi det mest af i det første, eller det dækkede vi i det første afsnit. Og sådan den anden store, det store intermezzo, han har haft med sådan de regulatoriske og antidopingmyndighederne, det er hans forbindelse med Belko-skandalen, som har været sådan det mest organiserede dopingprogram, der er blevet afsløret i USA. Og så til sidst også her, det der hedder, altså opfindelsen, eller genfindelsen, hvad man skal kalde det, af det stimulans, der hedder DMAA, som mange danskere sikkert kender fra det kosteskud af Jack 3D, som også blev ulovligt ret kort tid efter. I det interview, vi skal lave i dag, der bliver det lidt mere juicy, end det gjorde sidste gang, kan jeg godt sige. Der kommer nogle afsløringer, som jeg ikke har hørt Patrick lave før, og jeg skal nok komme tættere på, hvad det er. I kan nok måske til at høre det på et eller andet tidspunkt selv. Men det bliver mere juicy den her gang. Jeg vil gerne på forhånd undskylde for forbindelsesproblemerne. Vi har ringet til ham på en Skype, til hans telefon fra en Skype på min Skype-konto. Det var sådan, det kunne være, det var sådan, vi kunne få forbindelse. Der gør der en lille smule forsinkelse på signalet. Så det er jo bare sådan, det er. Og så samtidig med, så vi skal huske på, og så nogle gange, når Patrick, han, hvis der er nogle lange pauser, eller hvis han leder efter ordene, så skyldes det altså, at han har fået en hjerneskade efter et hovedtrauma engang, som giver ham nogle problemer, han kæmper med. Ikke? Jeg lyder også lidt forkølet. Det er fordi, at optagelsen blev lavet umiddelbart efter, jeg havde haft corona, hvor der, jeg havde sådan ret vedholdende forkølelsessymptomer i lang tid bagefter. Så det var vist, i virkeligheden det. Jeg er altså vært Anders Nedergaard, a.k.a. Dr. Muskel. Og I skal huske, at I kan skrive ind til mig på afn@andersnedergaard.dk eller på programmets Facebook-side eller Instagram-side. Vi skal tage i gang.
Hello.
Hi there. Can you hear me all right? This is Anders.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. Can you hear me?
Hold on a second. Yes, I can hear you.
I det første afsnit med Patrick, der fik vi jo dækket hans engagement med brohormoner, og vi nåede et godt stykke ind i hans historie med, med den her badkostskandale. Vi blev altså ikke færdig, så det er der, at vi samler tråden op igen i dag. Så her i det første segment, der snakker vi en del om sammensætningen af det her dopingprogram, der var i badkostskandalen, og hans engagement i det. Og for dem, der ikke har hørt det første afsnit, så kan jeg godt lige lave en lille recap. Balco-skandalen, det bestod af, at der var en entreprenant fyr, der egentlig er handlet med kosttilskud, som lærte Patrick at kende gennem et online bodybuilding forum, der var. Og ham, der Victor Conte, fik med stablet sådan et dopingprogram på benene, hvor han sørgede for, at de kunne sign up på abonnement, og så kunne de få sådan en lækker cocktail med modafinil, som er sådan noget anti-sovemedicin, et stimulans, kan man sige, lidt ligesom amfetamin eller kokain, men nok lidt mindre usundt. Og væksthormon og EPO. Og så fik de en gel i noget af programmet, som der gjorde, at de øgede deres testosteron og epitestosteronniveauer, så deres dopingprøver så mere normale ud. Og så Patrick Arnold, han lavede nogle designers derude, som simpelthen ikke bongede ud på de dopingtest, man lavede på det tidspunkt. Og det er specielt de to steroider, som han lavede der, det var desoximetyltestosteron og tetrahydrogestrinon. Også kendt som DMT og THG. Jamen, det er virkelig det. Det fortæller han mere om sit engagement i her.
So thank you for taking your time to talk to me and the listeners of Fitness MK again. When we last talked, we stopped right after we've been talking about the Belco scandal, and you described Victor Conte as the worst criminal ever. I think it were your words.
Well, the stupidest criminal ever.
Yeah.
Insofar as he just couldn't keep his mouth shut and would send everything by emails. And he would tell me, don't forget to delete the emails, as though deleting your emails means that they're going to disappear. And
so in the Belco doping program, people were given like the testosterone, epitestosterone gel and morphinil and EPO and growth hormone. How, to what extent were you involved in the program with the other drugs? I know you did the designer steroids, but with the other stuff...
He said when the athletes were taking THG,
yeah,
the testosterone levels were out of that, it threw the ratio off.
Yeah. So sorry, can you repeat that? You're being chopped up.
I'm sorry. The athlete's testosterone, the epitestosterone ratio, all over the place because their own production of testosterone and epitestosterone was so low.
Yeah.
That I guess when you're so suppressed by your own production gets so low, and then the ratio is screwed up for some reason. So he said, well, what can we do about this? And I told him that East Germans give their apps testosterone, and testosterone. So both esters.
Sorry, can you repeat the last part again? You're getting chopped up again.
I'm sorry. This is not a good connection. Let me go outside.
It's weird because right now when you're talking, it's perfectly clear, but it that's weird. Yeah.
It's okay now?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go outside. Sorry about this.
Oh, no problem, man. I appreciate it.
Taking THG,
yeah,
it suppressed their own natural production of testosterone,
yeah,
and epitestosterone to the point where the normal 2-to-1 ratio was all over the place. Yeah. I don't know if it was more epi or more test, but it was either or. Because
yeah,
when your levels get down so much, the ratio just gets all screwed up.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had read a book or a journal article about the German or the GDR program of doping. And what they would do is they would give their athletes testosterone propionate and epitestosterone propionate in a 20-to-1 ratio. Now, the reason why they did that is because your body then metabolizes them so that your urine comes out as 2-to-1.
Okay.
Or whatever it's supposed to be, 2-to-1 or somewhere
below 4-to-1.
In the normal range. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think back
and so, and so I suggested a topical formula as opposed to, you know, making an injection.
Yeah.
And I had a friend in Texas who was a pharmacist, compounding pharmacist. He ended up making the stuff in a cream.
Okay.
And I basically hooked him up with Victor, and he made it and shipped it to Victor. And then later on, I think Victor had someone else make it for him.
Okay.
But, yeah, but Victor always maintains that he came up with it himself, and that's, I don't know why he does that. He just wants to, I don't know, doesn't matter, but that's how it went down.
Yeah. Yeah, so the testosterone epitest gel was not implemented until they started using the THG.
As far as my memory go, that is correct because they did not have that problem with norbolethone.
Yeah.
As far as I recall, but I remember when they started using THG, it was so potent. It was so suppressive that's when their ratios started to go wacky.
Yeah.
And their endogenous production of testosterone just went down to practically zero.
How would you rate norbolethone and THG compared to commonly known androgens?
Well, as far as suppressive PTA, hypothalamic pituitary testicular axis suppression.
Yeah.
THG definitely is probably one of the most potent steroids of any that I'm aware of.
Yeah, yeah.
As far as anabolic effects, strength effects, I could say is that when Victor first started using it, he was giving people like 5 milligrams, 10 milligrams a day. And he ended up going down to 1 milligram or
damn,
half a milligram. And then not every day, you know, like every, like 3 or 4 days a week, especially with women, he would get very little.
Yeah.
And even that tiny amount, you know, they pretty profound effects. And when taken, of course, with the growth hormone and insulin and EPO and everything else he was giving them. If I were to compare it to a known steroid, or a steroid that some people may have heard of, I would compare it to metronidazole, which is methyl trienolone.
Yeah.
Basically, it's methylated trenbolone.
Yeah.
It's probably, they're probably pretty similar in actually structurally, it's kind of a, they're very structurally similar.
Okay.
But there's just a couple of carbon chains on the THG that aren't on methyltrenolone.
Yeah, but methyltren is, I mean, isn't that considered the pretty much the strongest androgen there is?
Well, that was ever available in any amounts.
Yeah.
If you look in the literature, there have been other ones that have been more potent, tested on rats.
Yeah, yeah.
One example would be 7-alpha-methyl or 17-alpha-dimethyltrenbolone, which is basically methyltrenolone. So when you look at, I don't know how many of your listeners are going to understand this, but if you look at the structure of methyltrenolone and you put a 7-alpha-methyl on there, which is the same functional group that mitolarone has.
Yeah.
That was developed at one time, and that's, if you look in the Vita book, which is a compilation of all the research on steroids.
Yeah.
Or most of it, it shows a listing, and it's the most potent in the listing.
Okay. And what would you compare norbolethone to?
It's very hard for me to say, because it's probably similar to Nylivar or Northandrolone.
Yeah.
But I don't know anyone that's ever taken Nylivar. So structurally speaking, they probably are pretty much the same. The thing with Norbolethone is that you gained a lot of weight on it. There was a lot of water retention.
Okay.
And so people got gains very quickly. However, that wasn't very good for these track athletes, because they don't want to have excess water weight.
No.
So when they switched to THG, they have that problem. And part of the reason may have been because research after the whole scandal showed that THG was actually anti-mineral corticoid.
Yep.
Sort of like spironolactone.
Yes.
It shuts down your kids' aldosterone.
Yeah.
Well, it is an aldosterone antagonist.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem that he confronted is using THC and other, I won't mention, is that it could make you very tight.
Okay.
Your muscles, the tone of your muscles would be too tight for, say, a sprinter or something. So they had to be very careful with how much they gave them and how often they gave it to them, and, you know, physical therapy and all that. You don't want to tear a hamstring or something like that.
So did they actually like lose range of motion from tightness, or was it just a feeling of tightness?
Yeah. Yeah. Now I've tried stuff, and I know I could tell that, you know, it may be tight, which wasn't good, but I'm not a sprinter or anything.
Oh, no.
So I didn't really care. But yes, it's not good for an athlete. That depends. And most even weightlifting, you know, you have to have your full flexibility, range of motion.
Yeah.
Be able to exercise correctly.
I think the only ones that doesn't care would be Louis Simmons and Dave Tate.
Oh, power lifters?
Yeah, especially those power lifters from.
Possibly. Olympic lifters, however, I think, you know, if you're trying to do a clean and jerk.
Yeah.
Proper range of, you know, you're stiff.
Yeah.
Could totally throw off your form. But just pure powerlifting, yeah, you're right. It may not be.
But one thing, I mean, I've been a scientist working with like sports and muscle physiology and how, you know, a drug like halotestin that can pretty much increase people's strength by 10% in 1 week. No one knows how that works. That's just amazing
actually,
to me. I mean, of course, it's androgen.
You said that because halotestin is also an anti-mineral corticoid.
Yeah.
I think it was a study that came out 10 years ago, and they tested all kinds of androgens, anabolics, to see their effects on different receptors and...
Yeah, like receptor profile.
And hormone activity, and they found that halotestin was a pretty potent anti-mineral corticoid. So that's something to do with strength. I'm not sure, but it'd make you tight. If make you tight can increase your strength, but it also hurt you.
So. Oh, but what is the molecular correlate in the muscle of being tight? I mean, it still requires myosin and actin to do something in order to do the stuff to lift weights. But like a 10% increase in people that are trained already, that's an insane improvement. I mean. And from like a muscle science perspective, that's really weird that hasn't been characterized fully yet.
Yeah, it must have something to do with the central nervous system. And I'm not sure if that has anything to do with mineral corticoids or not.
No, but it's amazing and fascinating, at least.
I would say now that I think back, I tried halotestin a long, long time ago, and it did make me very strong, and it made me tight. I remember I tried to deadlift what I usually would deadlift, and I wasn't able to really do it because my form was off. But I felt, you know, tight and pumped, but...
Yeah.
So I guess in certain, I can bench press. It's not a bad thing, but for me, I'd say I'm already very tight in the hamstrings and lower back. So deadlifting had an adverse effect on me.
Yeah.
I det næste segment her i interviewet med Patrick Arnold, der går vi ind i det her med selve det retslige efterspil efter Balco-sagen. For dem, der ikke er ligesom med på de amerikanske betegnelser, så er en indictment, det er jo en sigtelse, og perjury, det er det, der kaldes menet eller lyve under ed på dansk. Og det er noget, vi kommer til at snakke om i løbet af interviewet, fordi at i forbindelse med det her retssagskompleks, der kørte, hvor der var jo en masse sportsfolk og Victor Conte og sådan alle mulige eller andre interessenter, der forsøgte i retssystemet ligesom at spille dem ud mod hinanden. Så det var bare lige derfor, at det var vigtigt at få det med. Så, men den del, den starter...
When the Balco scandal, when the Balco lab was kind of exposed, how were you hit by it?
Well, I got a call from someone from the San Francisco Chronicle, I think it was, a call at work. And I said, hi. And I forgot the guy's name, Lance something. And he said, have you heard about the raid on Balco Labs about steroids? And a steroid, and he said, tetrahydrogesterone. And I said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. But as soon as he said tetrahydrogesterone, I really knew what he was talking about. That's not what I called it, but that's, you could call it many things.
Yeah.
But it's basically gesterone with four hydrogen atoms added to the side chain. So that's tetrahydrogesterone. So then,
did that make you sweat? The phone call?
It made me sweat quite a bit. I was, I think I pretty much freaked out because I was just thinking, well, they're going to come knocking on my door now. And then it showed up in the news and nothing happened. And then I think my name was mentioned a few times because supposedly Victor Conti had given my name up when they raided him, but then he retracted it and they had all this evidence. They had all these empty boxes that he would throw in the trash, which is also being a stupid criminal because, he would throw syringes and he would throw boxes for my address. So the feds had enough evidence, but the way it works in the United States federal justice, criminal justice system, is that they don't indict someone without a vast preponderance of evidence.
No.
It's not like a local or state indictment where that would have been enough for them to indict me, but they wanted to subpoena people at grand jury hearings. And I think part of that is that they wanted to bring all the athletes in, and especially Barry Bonds, and force them to testify as to whether they had ever used steroids, have they ever used Herbolothrone, THC. And of course, these athletes don't know what those names mean. Have they ever received drugs from Victor and all that?
Yeah.
That ended up going on for 2 years.
Holy shit.
And Marion Jones was one of them, Barry Bonds, all kinds of athletes, big track stars.
Yeah, and hockey
players.
And baseball.
And baseball, other baseball players. So 2 years went by, and I was thinking, well, this is weird. You know, if they haven't indicted me or at least subpoenaed me or served a search warrant on my lab or my house, then, you know, it's been 2 years and I stopped really sweating about the whole thing. And I think I said a couple of stupid things on the internet. and I think that was enough. I think that was enough to piss off whatever federal judge had to sign off on the search warrant for my business. And it was September of 2005 that they ended up banging on the doors. And they didn't find anything because I never made that stuff in that location.
Okay.
I had done all that stuff in where our lab was previously located, and they never even went to search that place, and that's the place where I'm at right now.
Wow.
But even if they did, they wouldn't have found anything.
Oh.
Because the little bit I had, I actually had in a storage unit, and I had, I assume this is so long ago, doesn't matter now, but it's almost 20 years ago. I'm under someone else's name.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lockbox. Actually, I had a couple of people keep it in their place, and I finally got the... And I eventually took all the stuff and just threw it out.
Yeah.
In a cornfield.
Some farmer got real lucky.
Yeah, well, I don't know if steroids work on corn, but if they did, it would have been, like trees or something.
So you just threw the crates in the field?
What's that?
You threw the crates?
I would pour the liquids.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Out. These are all in liquid form.
Okay.
Either like propylene glycol or vegetable oil.
Yeah.
And I would just pour it all out in a cornfield, and then just through the empty bottles, some random dumpster that far from everyone.
So what was the ultimate outcome?
Well, the ultimate outcome was after I was, I ended up being indicted. I don't know how long it was after the search warrant. But I think after the search warrant, they may have found some more information concerning some other people. And so they dragged, I don't know how, a dozen or more people to grand jury hearings, most of them being athletes, some being trainers. And they pretty much had to perjure themselves, or they would admit to cheating and doping, although that's not a...
federal offense.
Well, giving a designer steroid to an athlete is not a law, it still isn't a law. However, it in the eyes of the World Anti-Doping Agency, they find out about it. It's you're banned for I don't know 2 years at least or something.
Yeah.
That's why everyone left. And then after they served the indictment with me, I had to go to court several times. I had to fly out to San Francisco. And ultimately, I was indicted. I was sentenced. And before I served my sentence, this month or so, before I served my sentence, I submitted to testify on the athletes that had perjured themselves, not to protect me, but really to protect their reputations with WADA, right?
Yeah.
So I had to go there and they asked me questions about all these athletes and said, I don't know. I never sent anything to them. So I'm thinking to myself, oh God, now I'm potentially going to be hit with a perjury charge.
Yeah,
which ultimately might have made my prison sentence much more serious. But the only person that they ever successfully indicted for perjury was this Tammy Thomas cyclist, and I had to appear at her court here, and this was after I got out of prison. I know it gets really complicated, but no one else.
It's fine.
And I wasn't charged with perjury.
No.
But I did go there, and I had to pretty much cover up most of what I knew about this Tammy Thomas woman.
Okay.
But I was really ashamed because she was a nobody.
Okay.
And it was kind of a warm up for the Barry Bonds perjury hearing, which happened maybe 6 months later, and Barry Bonds got off. So,
but the
Barry Bonds has money.
The perjury hearing was because they had said something else in court before.
they found THG in his urine, I assume.
Yeah.
They had evidence, maybe from when they searched Victor Conti's Balco offices and other things. But for some reason, his attorneys were so good that he was acquitted.
Okay.
Walked away. So.
But perjury, that's lying in court, right? So what had he been lying about?
What had I been lying about?
No. What had Barry Bonds been lying about? And perjury is lying in court, right?
Oh, he would... Okay, so before I was indicted, you know, they were bringing Barry Bonds and Jason Giambi and Marion Jones, all these people to court to get evidence against me, I guess, or anyone else. Greg Anderson, I think, was a Barry Bonds trainer. And also to force these athletes to perjure themselves. Because they take, for instance, Marion Jones. She was like a superstar back then. And she had been accused of doping, and she was so adamant that she never touched any drugs. And so she lied. And they really wanted to get her to lie and then
liberate her with the perjury.
Yeah. And so when I had to go to the grand jury, it was questions about these athletes. They wanted to they were trying to get me to say, I gave them that stuff. I shipped it to Victor. Victor told me he gave them, but I didn't. I'm a little fuzzy on the timeline, but I was very careful about what I said, and I certainly didn't volunteer any information. And Marion Jones got away. I think she got away.
I can't remember either.
Really remember. Oh. Yeah. And there was also some stuff going on in Greece, but that's not under United States jurisdiction. However, didn't stop them from asking me a lot of questions about athletes from other countries.
But you didn't have you didn't have anything to do with the athletes directly. That was Victor Conte, right?
There were other trainers.
Okay.
In the United States, and one guy over there in the Mediterranean. It's about as specific as I want to be. he was a trainer, and he got he almost got really big trouble.
Okay.
It's pretty much widely known that he had these two track athletes that both one of them I think Contreras got a gold medal in Sydney, and this other one, Santos.
Yeah.
The man and the woman. One of them got a gold medal. One of them got a silver medal in track.
Yeah.
And they were like the darlings of Greece, superstars. And then in 2004, the Summer Olympics was actually held in Athens. And this trainer guy is frantically trying to call me. And I'm completely avoiding him because this is 2004 and I had yet to be indicted, and I wasn't going to say damn thing. I wasn't going to talk to him. But what I found out, I don't know how I found out, but he was trying to microdose methyltrianolone or something. And what ended up happening was he staged a motorcycle accident.
Ooh.
Right before, like a few days before the Olympics, the two athletes that I mentioned before, man and woman, track, they won medals in Sydney.
Yeah.
And they both went to the hospital to avoid the doping testers, and they got in trouble for evading the testers.
Yeah.
And it was a mess, but Nobody got in a criminal trouble.
Okay.
The trainer or the athletes over in Greece, but you know, their system over there is a little different than ours.
Yeah. So you had a little contact with some of the distributors. Is that correctly understood?
Well, I never met any of these any athletes from this country that this trainer worked with, but I had talked to and had met the trainer.
Okay.
Before he had relatives in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, how did what happened to Victor Konta?
He ended up getting sentenced before I even got indicted, I think, and he got charged with distribution of anabolic steroids, which actually is a false charge because he was distributing stuff other than the designer steroids, he was giving them the testosterone and the cream and other things. But he ended up getting 4 months in prison and 4 months home confinement and 2-3 years of probation, which is around the same sentence that they were handed down to me.
Okay.
Ultimately.
Are you still talking to him? Are you on bad terms?
What's that again?
Are you still talking to him or are you on bad terms now?
I haven't spoken a single word to Victor Konta since 2003.
Okay, you need to say
not
no more.
Not a single word. And I remember it was a 2003 Mr. Olympia. And this would have been like a month. Oh, what a month of 2003. It would have been, it would have been weeks or something right after Victor was raided. And he came to the show, and I was having dinner in a restaurant with my attorney, Victor Collins, and he sees Victor walk into the restaurant, and Victor sees me, and he says, hey, hey. And my attorney, Rick Collins, shoots out of his chair and runs over to Victor and says, get out of here. Go away. Stay away from Patrick. And Patrick said, do not talk to him under any circumstances. Well, eventually, everyone served a sentence and stuff. And I definitely talk about him to reporters.
Yeah.
But I never talked to him. And I was pretty pissed off how he was trying to make it sound as though he invented all this stuff himself. And he never would give any credit to me. That matters, but I kind of felt a little disrespected.
Yeah.
He wanted to be thought of as this mad genius that did it all himself. And if it weren't for the Brolothone THG and a third one, which he never utilized.
Yeah.
And that cream, the Testepi cream, he wouldn't have had the success with his athletes that he did, because basically he would have been.
He was glorified as supplement vendor, right?
He would just have to use the same stuff that other trainers were using, like growth hormone and insulin and EPO.
Yeah.
So it was the steroids. It was the designer steroids that changed everything.
Og så kom vi frem til den juicy del af interviewet. Det startede egentlig med, at jeg begyndte at spørge Patrick til nogle af effekterne af de her designers derude, og logistikken omkring dopingprogrammet, altså hvor mange, hvem har fået hvad, og hvor mange og sådan nogle ting, hvor mange verdensrekorder og sådan. Undervejs så slap der nogle ting ud, som jeg ikke tror, Patrick har sagt til nogen før på interview. Blandt andet, hvordan at han har solgt de her designers derude til en meget, meget prominent træner, som dem, der har lidt, været lidt involveret i træningsmiljøet, nok ved, hvem er. Han er død nu, men det kommer senere. Og en ret prominent kampsportsudøver også, hvis navnet også bliver droppet undervejs. Så jeg er lige ved at eksplodere for at sige det, men det skal jeg selvfølgelig nok lade være med. I kommer til at høre det selv lige om lidt. Det kommer også frem, hvordan Patrick rent faktisk var den første, der fandt ud af, at det her stof, der hedder modafinil, at det måske kunne noget i forbindelse med at være præstationsfremmende. Altså hvordan det var ham, der ligesom fik det på Balco, den her Balco-ordning. Modafinil, det er et stimulans, altså som virker centralstimulerende, lidt på samme måde som koffein eller efedrin gør det lidt stærkere og lidt længere tid. Og i Danmark, der er det, sådan, der er det godkendt til, som en slags medicin til folk, der har narkolepsi, der er sovesyge. Men altså, der er lavet studier på det nu, og man har fundet, at det er præstationsfremmende. De fleste former for stimulanser er en eller anden grad af præstationsfremmende, fordi nogle af dem, fordi de har et eller andet omfang af direkte effekter på, hvordan vores stofskifte virker. Men den dominerende effekt er formodentlig, fordi at de påvirker den måde, vores hjerne processerer og opfatter udmattelse på. Så når hjernen opfatter, vi er udmattet, så bliver det, at den med til at skrue ned for vores evne til at præstere. Og det er sandsynligvis der, hvor stimulanserne ligesom smider en svensk nøgle i maskineriet. Fortæller også, hvordan at der har været en mulvarp hos Don Catlin, som var den amerikanske antidopingjæger, som har hjulpet dem med at finde ud af, om man kunne tisse rent med de her designers derude, hvilket også er en ret easy afsløring. Så glæder jeg. Det her, det bliver the juicy bit.
How many world or Olympic records do you think were broken while on the program?
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe 5-10.
Okay.
I think of 5 offhand, pretty much, and I'm sure there's others.
Yeah.
Because I distribute this stuff to people that then distributed it to other people. So there's probably athletes out there and trainers that were using it and I didn't even know were using it.
Okay. So how many, is it known how many was on the, like the program, the Balco program?
Yeah, I think it was, but I'm talking not just Balco athletes, but other trainers.
Okay.
This other guy, a bodybuilder from also that same area of Europe. I sold it to him. He sold it. He worked at Victor, but he wanted for himself. And also this guy, Charles Poliquin,
yeah,
ended up getting it. He may have gotten it through this bodybuilder
guy.
And he called it, he made a name for it called the Modified F or something.
The what?
F. Modified F, as in referring to Firazabal, which was the supposed compound that Ben Johnson took. And he was, I don't know how many athletes, Poliquin, it's maybe the 2000s, I don't know how many he gave them to, but he worked with a lot of top athletes.
But now
so
what
the technicals.
But now you're just talking about the designer steroids, right? And the test, epitest gel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, not the...
not the gel?
I don't know. After Victor started having someone else make this that gel, they're not the pharmacy guy in Texas.
Yeah.
He... I don't know where that stuff went, if other people used it, but I never had it made for anyone else.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Okay.
These are interesting questions that I actually never really thought about.
But the Victor Conte version of the program with modafinil and EPO and HGH, is it known how many was on that program?
You probably have about as good ideas. A lot of track athletes. And modafinil is another thing that I had my pharmacy friend.
Yeah.
He provided that to Victor, because Victor also to this, the guy over in Europe, because he wanted an undetectable stimulant.
Yeah.
And modafinil, it's not a classical stimulant, but it does have a mild stimulant effect. So yeah, that was another one of my ideas, I guess.
Okay. Where did that come from?
A lot of them. What is that?
Where did that idea come from?
Well, I was familiar with modafinil because I don't remember where I read about it. I think I knew someone that had narcolepsy.
Yeah.
And we talked about it. And I thought to myself, you know, this isn't tested for. And it was actually the guy in Europe that kept asking me, do you have anything that I can give athletes as a stimulant that's not banned? And I said, try modafinil.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, it works. And then that's when I told Victor about it. Hold on one second.
Yeah.
I'm getting old. I had to bend over to pick something up. But it ended up working. So Victor ended up using it with his athletes too.
Yeah.
And there must have been, since Victor, like I said before, thought that just hitting the delete button on his emails would get rid of all the evidence. So any emails that I may have sent him, I probably mentioned modafinil, but I never, as far as the nobolethone and THD and Madol, which was he never actually gave the athletes, but he was testing it,
yeah,
kind of beta testing it.
So
those all, but he didn't know that. I didn't tell anyone the chemical names of those. I just gave them weird names and said, it kind of acts like this, you know.
Okay.
He would use them, and he had a guy at UCLA lab that would take these people's urine and run them through the standard doping testing protocol, and they would come back clean or clear.
Did UCLA have an accredited anti-doping lab at the time?
Yeah, it was actually a major best man named Ron Catlin.
Oh, I was going to ask about him in just a second, actually. So
yeah, this was Don Catlin's lab, but one of Don Catlin's assistants, his name was Victor Urelitz. He had actually helped design the original protocol for testing anabolic steroids. He, Victor, would send urine. Victor Conti would send his athlete's urine to Victor Urelitz, who is Don Catlin's partner, and then he would, on the side, test it and tell Victor whether or not.
Oh, that's pretty. That's pretty blackhead.
And there's another person who I'm not going to mention. What's that? It's my business partner.
Sorry.
With this guy worked both sides, so he. He would go meet with the main doping person in Montreal, whose name was Christiane Ayotte. He would have dinner with her, and she would tell this guy, was also from Canada, he would tell this guy all everything that's going on, and we're onto these designer steroids somehow. And then he'd go back, and he would tell Victor or... And he worked with a fighter who was over in Japan Yeah. Black guy's name, I forgot, Bob Sapp, I think the name was. And he actually bought more of the clear for me than anyone ever.
Interesting.
He bought, and he was like friends, worked very closely with this guy, and I just told you, worked both sides. It was a stupid game.
Yeah.
I wish everyone realized that you know, the people that got indicted and were, you know, shamed.
Yeah, but a lot of people went off.
It went a lot. There were a lot more people were, you know, did a lot worse things that actually were traitors to their doping.
K-Course
agencies. Yeah.
but if you were to guess, how many people do you think were on the Belco program, like with the peptide hormones as well? Is it in the hundreds or in the thousands?
Whoever Victor worked with, I don't know how many people he worked with, 20, 30.
Oh, it's that? Okay.
But what I was telling you before is that this stuff was distributed to many other people other than Victor.
Yeah.
And they weren't using Victor's protocol. They were using THG and, you know, with whatever they wanted to with their athletes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. And I don't think any of them ever got caught.
Hmm.
Because I think they were really interested in Barry Bonds, which led them to Victor Conti. And then they were really only just interested in Victor Conti's athletes and then the other guy over in Europe. And they didn't really catch on to anyone else.
So just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, that's the story with all these doping cases when they're broken open, I guess.
Oh, yeah, you know, some people get in trouble. Well, there's every one guy that gets in trouble, 10 other people get away with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing the same thing.
Yeah, for the people listening, the guy got Don Catlin, we were talking about before, he was like the main, he was like the one of the generals in the, and a scientist in the American anti-doping science and USA the community.
He was a chief scientist of the United States Anti-Doping Agency. And he retired maybe about 2004 or something, 2005.
So in many ways, he must have been kind of like your adversary in all of this. I mean, did you ever meet him?
No, I haven't. I have not. And he knew.
Did he know you?
He knew of me.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, he knew of me back when I started selling the pro hormones, late 90s.
Yeah.
And I actually did an interview with a NBC News sports broadcaster guy named Bob Costas.
Yeah.
I think probably world famous.
Yeah.
He came to my lab and he was basically after, wanted to get dirt on Barry Bonds, and he also wanted to trash the commissioner of baseball.
Okay.
Because I think it was Bob Costas' dream, it may still be, to one day be the commissioner of baseball himself, because he's a... I'm not going to tell you how I know that, but...
We all have aspirations.
Yeah, well, you know... He's not that old. It still happens.
Yeah. But you never met Don Catlin.
No, but during, when that interview with me broadcast, there was part of it where he went to Don Catlin's lab to talk about THG and Victor Conti and everything. And Catlin actually said, he said, whoever, you know, he said, I don't like to give accolades to the other side, you know, the enemy, but he said, whoever made this had to be brilliant. And I was like, wow, But
yeah, a pat on the shoulder.
Yeah, unfortunately, that you can't find that on the internet because it's so copyright protected. I have a CD. I have a CD of it, but I don't even know if I still have it. I might have lost it.
It's like a trophy.
Well, yeah, yeah. I can also show friends if I want to. Yeah. But I don't know.
Well, that's pretty interesting. How about the black hat guy, the other Victor from Catlin's lab? Was he ever exposed?
Nope. Not as far as I know, he was never exposed.
Damn.
Pretty
crazy.
I am guessing because it would just be too much of an embarrassment to the anti-doping agencies to reveal, you know, that they were all double agents, you know, throughout the whole thing, and it would have made them look silly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's probably why they just ignored all that evidence.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. I think that concludes the Balco story, because just to leave a little time for the last series of questions I have.
Og her der kommer den sidste del af interviewet med Patrick Arnold, som handler om det her stimulans DMAA, dimethylamylamin, som fandt vej i kosttilskud Jack 3D, som var all the rage en overgang. Det er jo sådan tilhører den der kategori af kosttilskud, eller stoffet blev brugt i den kategori af kosttilskud, man kalder pre-workouts, altså det her pulver med mærkelig typisk med meget voldsomme farver og en meget voldsom syntetisk smag, som man hakker i hjernen, før man skal ned og træne sig i stykker. Og det kom så egentlig af på det tidspunkt, at efedrin, det var kort forinden blevet ulovligt at bruge i kosttilskud i USA. Og derfor så skulle man finde et andet stimulans, og så fandt de så det her dimethylamylamin, som blev sådan en ret stor ting i kosttilskudsverdenen, fordi at der var ad med smadret på. Og det er meget, det er ret stærkt stimulans. Det er ikke, det er sådan op i samme vindstyrke som amfetamin og sådan noget. Det er lidt hurtigere ind og ud af kroppen, men det er easy. Og det gør selvfølgelig også, at det ikke er helt lige så sikkert at tage, og folk, man crasher hårdt bagefter og får det lidt ret skidt bagefter også. Så det er egentlig det, vi kommer til nu. Den her del af interviewet stopper lidt abrupt, fordi at, vi nåede til, at Patrick, han var nødt til at tage tilbage i laboratoriet igen og arbejde videre. Men altså, jeg synes, vi fik det ud af ham, som vi gerne ville have. Så her kommer, hvad hedder det, hans oplevelse af, hvordan den her Balco, altså hvordan den her DMMA-historie, den foldede sig ud.
Which is about the DMAA stimulant. That people here in Denmark probably know it from the supplement Jack 3D, where it appeared the first, I can't remember the year, but it was around for a couple of years, and then just a few marginal supplements. And that's your invention of sorts as well?
Yeah, I discovered the chemical doing a search at through an internet library of chemical compounds and abstracts, and I thought that it possibly, it actually was sold at one time as a nasal decongestant.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, it might possibly have stimulant properties. So I was able to procure a small sample of it, and I put 25 milligrams into these gelatin caps, and I gave it to five or six different people. And I remember the day. Some of them were people I worked with, and they were like, wow, man, I feel like I want to go work out. And then we went to lunch, and another guy I had given it to, we ran into him, and he says, holy crap, what is this stuff? So then we tried to figure out how to manufacture it ourselves, but it was too difficult. And then we found someone that actually would manufacture it for a decent price. And then we started selling it on a product called AMP,
yeah,
which also had caffeine and a chocolate extract called chocamine.
Yeah.
And something else. I don't know what else was in there. That sold pretty well. And then we had a product called Clear Shot, which is liquid that had it. But no, but we didn't have much marketing. And it wasn't until this guy, Jacob, found out about it and put it in his Jack 3D.
Yeah.
You know, and then overhyped it. Then it became extremely popular everywhere. He made millions and millions, but he's serving a prison sentence now. Because not for that, but for other stuff. Because he would put whatever the hell he wanted in his supplements.
Yeah, yeah.
And lie about the source, and they finally caught him, because people ended up dying of or getting liver failure.
Damn.
From some betel nut extract. Well, he called it an extract. It was actually a synthetic compound.
That sucks.
Analog of, yeah. Well, yeah. He deserved it. And I'm not going to shed any tears for him.
Oh, no. But the DMAA was discovered in the 40s by Lilly. So when you stumbled upon it, was it from a patent database or just a list of compound library?
No, I think it was from a Russian article, and they were just looking at various compounds.
Okay.
And I don't know if this compound, I think this is after Lilly had patented it.
Okay.
As a nasal decongestant. But that's where I stumbled across it. And then when I did a search on DMAA, then I found out that, yeah, it had been patented once and used one for a short period of time as an inhaler.
Yeah, yeah.
To clear up the sinuses.
So ephedrine was made illegal a couple of years previous, before this, right? So that's what made the hole in the market for it. Is that correct?
Yeah. Generally speaking, it's right, but it was never made illegal.
But
you
regulated.
Can still buy ephedrine or ephedrine at all over the counter, or, well, not anymore, but you could go to a pharmacy and ask for a certain brand of nasal decongestant. There's one called Primatine tablets that has ephedrine in it and mucolytic. But if you try to sell it as a supplement, which some people, the FDA came down strongly on it. They never made it technically illegal, but when people would sell it, they'd send them letters and they actually raided some people. That's a whole nother story.
But
wait a minute. I'm getting a little bit confused. I'm talking about ephedrine. That is not illegal. It's just
regulated.
It's FDA considers it a drug.
Yeah.
And not a supplement.
Yeah, I can see from the Wikipedia article here. It says that the ephedrine was banned as a dietary supplement in 2005.
Yeah, it's around 2004 or 2005. And that's about the time that I was in a big rush to find a replacement for ephedrine.
Yeah.
Because it was just so widely popular. I figured if I could find something that works just as well or almost as well, and this DMAA ended up working just as well, actually had was superior in many ways. It had more of a psychological effect than just a purely peripheral stimulant effect.
Did you look at any other stimulants alongside the DMAA?
I had looked at a few others, but you know, nothing really compared to DMAA.
Okay.
And plus, whatever I found, I would also have to find a natural course. And there was a article that came out of China, which listed constituents of geranium oil. And the DMAA was one of the compounds that they said that they had found. And that was my justification for selling it as a dietary supplement. I said it's a constituent of geranium oil.
Yeah. So that makes it legitimate to sell as a dietary supplement? Or more legitimate?
Sort of, yeah. There's a very big gray area there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the FDA had their opinion on it eventually. They said, no. So we don't consider that adequate evidence.
So since then, there's been a couple of other similar compounds in the dietary supplements, DMBA and DMHA. Were any of those on your radar back then? Or are those later compounds?
Well, there was one similar compound to DMAA. It was, I think you said DMHA.
Yeah.
This stuff was actually 2-heptanamine. 2-methylheptanamine or something. Octopamine, that's what it was called.
Oh, yeah.
Octopamine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that...
I remember that one.
That had a natural source as well. And we sold that very briefly until some guy who knew Victor... There's so many Victors.
Yeah.
Don Catlin.
Oh,
that
yeah.
They were that they knew I was selling it and that they were onto it. They were, you know, and then so then we just stopped selling it.
But you didn't
and
synthesize
DMAA. No one knew about it. What's that?
You didn't synthesize it yourself, right?
No, it was actually pretty readily available. And I actually accidentally put on the label a misleading chemical name. I didn't do that on purpose, but it's a good thing I did, because I had to put the regular chemical name on there, then everyone else would have copied it. And
yeah,
I don't know. They would have gotten in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
So you were reselling it for in bulk for other supplements then? Is that correctly understood?
Well, we had a drinkable form stimulant that had some constituent of ginger in there, and it also had DMAA in there, and it was very effective, though we weren't a company that really was marketed things. We didn't spend a lot of money on marketing, so no one really heard of DMAA until that guy,
the Jack 3D guy.
Oh, the Jack 3D.
Yeah. So you're saying it was readily available. What was it used for?
Are you talking about the octopamine?
No, the DMAA.
No, that was not readily
that
available.
Was the talking. Okay.
Well, not until this Jacob guy found someone in China to make it for him, and then it showed up in all kinds of products.
Yeah.
It's a big mess.
Why do you think it's a mess?
Well, I think it's a mess because other companies ended up making so much money selling this compound, while we were a kind of a small fish in the marketing world of supplements.
Yeah.
And so these big companies ended up selling it, and you know, they had wide distribution. So I kind of feel
you got robbed,
a little ripped off.
Yeah.
And that everyone else made millions and millions, and we didn't come near that. But that was the same thing with a lot of the pro hormones too, with this 4-AD that I had actually patented, but I couldn't enforce the patent because that takes money, and Well, I don't want to get into that.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah.
We can go on forever with all these little stories.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. So I guess that's just something that happens with people that are really enthusiastic about a specific part of a trade, and then you get fucked over by people in suits. I mean, that's I've been there as well. I am there.
Oh yeah. Unless you have intellectual property protection and can afford to enforce that, people are just going to rip you off and violate your patents, and they know that you're not going to, you don't have the means to police that. Or if you can't get a patent, they'll just, you know, then they'll just take it, steal it, or steal the idea for themselves.
Yeah.
Det var altså Patrick Arnolds version af hans ophav til den her, til DMAA-historien i kosttilskudsverdenen. Jeg har lovet ham at reklamere lidt for hans foretagender nu. Som sagt, så arbejder han jo sammen med en af Dominik Agostino med at lave ketonstof-kosttilskud. Og han har tilknyttet sådan to foretagender. Det ene, det er det, der hedder Keto Sports, som har en range af, eller har sådan en portefølje af ketonstof kosttilskud, som man kan komme i fysiologisk ketose uden at lave en langvarig kulhydratrestriktion i sin kost. Det er måske også noget, vi skal lave et podcast afsnit om en gang. Der er nogen, der påstår, at det er præstationsfremmende, og videnskaben ser sådan, den stikker sådan lidt i alle retninger. Indtil videre ser det ikke overbevisende ud, men det er helt omvendt svært at afvise. Men hvis man skal have fat i sådan nogle ketonstof kosttilskud, så Dominik Agostino, der han er en af de helt, helt store kanoner inden for sådan noget ketosefysiologi. Så det er nok et ret godt sted at kigge efter det, hvis det er. Og det andet foretagende, han er tilknyttet eller arbejder for, det er noget, der hedder Prototype Nutrition. Så hvis man bare googler de der keto sports eller Prototype Nutrition, så er det dem, der dukker op. Jeg vil dog lige sige, ting, der man kan købe hos Prototype Nutrition, det er formodentlige stoffer, der ikke er sikre i forbindelse med dopingtest. Det er ikke ting, der er eksplicit på dopinglisten. Det er ikke sådan, at det er ude eller sådan noget som sådan, men det er sådan nogen, der er meget tæt på. Og der er en lille smule gummibagraf i dopinglisten, så der skal man nok være ret forsigtig, hvis man er et sted, hvor man kan være genstand for dopingtest. Så det er sådan lidt, det er lidt fringe-stuff. Det var historien om Patrick Arnold. Han sagde jo efter interviewet der med ham, at det var det længste interview, han nogensinde har givet, og hvor han har spilled flest beans om de ting, han har gået og lavet. Og der er jo, som I nok kan høre, så er der kommet nogle relativt juicy ting ud. Så jeg er glad. Det håber jeg sagde mig også, at I er.
Thank you once again. I really appreciate it. It's been awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Anders.
Yeah, have a nice day, man.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Du har lyttet til Fitness.mk. Jeg hedder Anders Nedergaard, og du kan lytte med til den her og de andre episoder af Fitness.mk via stream og podcast. Du kan streame det ind fra andersnedergaard.dk eller fra vores host Spreaker, og du kan podcasten fra alle de store podcasttjenester. Programmet er produceret af Jonas Pedersen, og I skal være velkommen til at skrive ind til mig, og det kan man på fn@andersnedergaard.dk eller på programmets Facebook-side eller Instagram, som begge to hedder Fitness.mk. Det var det. Tak for det.